Hello, this is Nicolene Ambrose with the Tri-County Journal for Wednesday, December 9th. First article, Illinois Ag in the Classroom receives funding for 2021 school year. The Illinois Agriculture in the Classroom, AITC, program is proud to announce Douglas County Ag in the Classroom was funded $7,656.12 for the 2021 school year. Illinois Agriculture in the Classroom based these grants to counties off the 2019-2020 year-end reports. 463,441 students received direct instruction with the assistance of county AITC programs. Classroom presentations, farm field trips, and agriculture expos added a new dimension to existing curricular standard. 25,642 Illinois teachers utilized free classroom resources and training. County AITC programs provided professional development programming to 901 classroom teachers. COVID-related shutdowns impacted elementary, secondary, and higher education in Illinois. Due to the support structure of the Illinois AITC program and our county-level coordination, accurate agricultural programming did not stop. Douglas County adapted to provide ag bags with ag mags and activities to all local libraries. 79 Agriculture in the Classroom coalitions serving 89 counties were awarded grants through the generous support of the IAA Foundation and the Illinois Agriculture in the Classroom County Grant Program. All 102 counties in Illinois received teacher resources, student curricular enhancements, and related materials from the IAITC program. Douglas County Ag in the Classroom presented 213 programs and reached 1,786 students and 87 educators during the 2019-2020 school year. Illinois AITC continues to be the powerhouse of agricultural literacy programming. Partners supporting these efforts include local county farm bureaus, University of Illinois Extension, soil and water conservation districts, as well as the Illinois Beef Association, Illinois Corn Growers Association, Illinois Department of Agriculture, Illinois Farm Bureau, Illinois Pork Producers Association, Illinois Soybean Association, and Midwest Dairy Association. Financial support for IAITC is provided by industry partners and individuals who generously contribute through IAA Foundation and its efforts. For more information on agriculture in the classroom in Douglas County, contact Douglas County Farm Bureau at 253-4442 or at AITC@douglasscfb.com. Next, there are some photos that won the Douglas County Museum Photography Contest. The Best in Show winners for the 2020 Douglas County Museum Photography Contest were Elementary Age Group, Old Man Terminus by Hazel Cordes; Junior High Age Group, Under the Sea by Alex Clark; High School Age Group, Organic by Karina Warfel; Adult Age Group, Tri Fives of Hinsboro by Callie Parr. Full results are available on the Douglas County Museum's website and Facebook page. More photos will be posted in those places as well. Next article, EIU's Gail and Richard Lumpkin School of Nursing receives $30,000 Simulation Center grant from the Coles Community Health Program. The Coles Community Health Program, CCHP, Board of Directors, at its November 10th board meeting, approved a $30,000 grant to the New Eastern Illinois University Gail and Richard Lumpkin School of Nursing to assist in the development of a simulation center. More specifically, grant funds will be used for faculty education, standardized patient development, and associated materials. Over the past year, A focus on simulation learning has intensified in nursing education, with social distancing requirements, limitations of protective equipment, and the constraints of clinical sites creating unique challenges for the field's future practitioners. The state of Illinois allows up to 25% of nursing clinicals to be substituted with simulation, a feature of the state's programming that predates the 2020 pandemic. Simulation education is the bridge between the classroom and real-life experiences. The simulation laboratory will further the EIU goal of advancing the curriculum that focuses on rural health and the underserved, according to Dr. Holly Farley, assistant professor and chairperson of EIU's School of Nursing. We are very thankful to the Coles Community Health Program for this initial grant. Eastern Illinois University established the Gail and Richard Lumpkin School of Nursing based on the critical shortage of nursing in central Illinois. The initial cohort of students will begin the program this spring. We are very pleased to be supporting the Simulation Center to be part of the professional development of healthcare students in our community, said Dr. Robert Good, president of the Coles Community Health Program and clinical professor of medicine at Carl. Next article, SBL welcomes new pulmonologist, Dr. Topin. When Jeremy Topin, MD, was a medical resident, he was drawn to helping people who were critically ill and struggling to breathe, so much so that it led him to a specialty he had never envisioned, pulmonology. I went to medical school thinking I was going into internal medicine and pediatrics. I wanted to treat people from the day they were born until the day they died. To my surprise, I fell in love with the ICU and critical care medicine, he said. I enjoyed the physiology and the fast pace of it, but I also saw that I had the unique opportunity and privilege to work with patients and their families at their most vulnerable times and to really help them through traumatic and scary times in their lives. After spending 15 years in private practice in the Chicago area, Dr. Topin is excited to serve at Sarah Bush Lincoln as its full-time in-house lung specialist and critical care doctor, particularly during the time of the COVID-19 pandemic. This is a great opportunity, and I look forward to offering services that will allow more patients to stay close to home during the times of critical illness, he said. As a pulmonologist, Dr. Topin cares for people with acute and chronic lung conditions. When he is in the critical care unit, he takes care of patients who need advanced life support and mechanical ventilation, but when he is in the office, Dr. Topin diagnoses and treats a range of respiratory issues, including shortness of breath, asthma, COPD, emphysema, and interstitial lung disease. Dr. Topin provides pulmonary function studies and procedures such as bronchoscopies and scopes of the lungs to diagnose lung disease. Plus, he collaborates with experts in nearly every specialty to deliver effective, personalized care. I look forward to building relationships to help people manage chronic lung diseases so they can live their lives as fully as possible with the values and preferences that are important to them, he said. Dr. Topin was born and raised in the Chicago suburb of Northbrook. He went to college at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he earned a bachelor's degree in political science. Medicine was nowhere on my radar. I thought I was going to go to law school, he said. After volunteering several years at a muscular dystrophy camp, he switched gears, hoping to enroll in physical therapy school. However, he was surprised to find a viable path to medical school. After completing his science prerequisites at Loyola University, Chicago, Dr. Topin was accepted into Rush University Medical College, where he earned his medical degree in 1998. He completed a four-year internal medicine and pediatric residency at the University of Chicago, followed by a three-year pulmonary and critical care fellowship at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago in 2005. Thereafter, he joined private practice. Every day is different, and it's been a privilege to work with patients and their families in the intensive care unit during these tough times, he said. Medicine still fascinates and excites me, but it's the relationships and the ability to help people navigate very difficult times that makes it so rewarding. Communication is so important, especially now with COVID, because families can't be with their loved ones who are sick, so we have to take a greater role in helping families understand what's going on. Ensuring that critically ill patients are heard, even when they cannot speak, has become a driving passion of Dr. Topin's. To initiate conversations about end-of-life decision-making and advanced care planning, Dr. Topin started writing a few years ago about some of his experiences and insights as a doctor. Several of his stories have been published in national newspapers, including The Washington Post, and he is currently writing a book on the topic. To aid in his own understanding of the issues people face, Dr. Topin is working toward a Master of Public Health degree. In his free time, Dr. Topin enjoys spending time with his wife, Becky Lee, and two children, both of whom are students at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He also plays water polo and is an avid triathlete. He plans to compete in his eighth Ironman race following the COVID-19 pandemic. Next, the obituaries. Natasha L. Enyart. Natasha Lynn Enyart, 36, of Mattoon, passed away at 10:20 p.m. on Friday, November 27th at Kindred Hospital in Chicago. A funeral service was held at 2 p.m. on Sunday, December 6th at the Edwards Funeral Home. Reverend Ivan Jess officiated. Burial was in the Arthur Cemetery at a later date. Visitation was held 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Edwards Funeral Home to help pay for funeral expenses. Betty Chancellor. Betty Chancellor, 87, of Arcola, passed away at 5:35 p.m. on Sunday, November 29th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were held at 1 p.m. on Saturday, December 5th at the Edwards Funeral Home. Reverend Matt Stump officiated. Burial was in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to Arcola United Methodist Church or Arcola Sports Booster. Saloma, I hope I'm saying that right, Saloma J. Stutzman. Saloma J. Hochstetler Stutzman, 98 years, 4 months, 19 days of Arcola, passed away at 8:05 p.m. on Sunday, November 22nd at her residence. Funeral services were held at 9 a.m. on Friday, November 27th at the Stutzman Family Residence, 421 North County Road, 400 East in Arcola. Bishop Irvin Plank officiated. Burial was in the Miller Cemetery in rural Arcola. Visitation was held anytime after 2 p.m. on Wednesday, November 25th and any time after 10 a.m. on Thursday, November 26th at the family residence. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Next article, Moultrie County Health Department confirms 11th COVID-19 related death on December 1st. It is with deep sadness that the Moultrie County Health Department, MCHD, confirms the passing of another resident, a male in his 80s. This is the 11th COVID-19 related death among Moultrie County residents. We send our deepest sympathies to his friends and family, Moultrie County Health Department Administrator Angela Hogan, RN, MSPH, said. We ask for understanding and the privacy of his loved ones as they mourn. To date, 909 Moultrie County residents have tested positive for COVID-19, which includes 10 previous COVID-19 related deaths. To help reduce the spread of COVID-19 in our communities, the MCHD strongly advises individuals and businesses to use these precautions. Watch physical distance and keep 6 feet from others. Wear a mask when in public places. Wash hands routinely. Stay home if ill. Protect yourself with the annual flu vaccine. If you are experiencing symptoms of COVID-19, please get tested. Symptoms can be found at the website https://www.moultrie.gov/. www.cdc.gov/coronavirus/2019-ncov/symptoms-testing. Information on area testing sites can be found online at https://dph.illinois.gov/testing. For more information on the Moultrie County Health Department's news, events, and services, please visit www.moultriehealth.org and follow us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Moultrie County Health. Next article, how to thoroughly clean and sanitize a backpack. Backpacks are useful tools for students and adults alike. From hiking supplies to school books to sports equipment, backpacks can store just about anything. As veritable workhorses, they're bound to get dirty and can benefit from periodic cleaning. While it may be tempting to simply throw a backpack into the washing machine, it is important to check the care instructions first. Some canvas, nylon, and fabric backpacks can go in the wash, but those made of leather or those with intricate details should not. Backpack manufacturers also advise against putting backpacks in a dryer. Here are steps to cleaning a backpack. 1. To get started, begin by removing any items from the backpack, including all of the pockets. If necessary, use a vacuum to get crumbs out of the backpack. 2. Check the care label to see if there are washing instructions. This will determine if you should wash it by hand or if it can be put in the machine. 3. If the bag can be machine washed, turn it inside out first or place it in a pillowcase so that the straps and zippers will not be caught. Then wash it on gentle setting with a mild detergent and lukewarm water. If the bag should be hand washed, use lukewarm water and a soft sponge or gentle bristle brush. The outdoor retailer REI says you do not want to harm any protective coatings on the pack. 4. Zippers need occasional cleaning to remove dirt, sand, or crumbs. Many zippers have water-resistant coatings, so do not scrub them. Use a lubricant made for zippers to help them slide smoothly. 5. Hang the bag to air dry upside down. It likely will dry more quickly outdoors, but avoid direct sunlight, which can compromise the integrity of the fabric or discolor the backpack. 6. Do not store or use the backpack until it is completely dry. 7. Sometimes a backpack may need to be disinfected to prevent the growth of fungus or bacteria. Athlete's foot fungus can easily transfer from socks and shoes to the backpack if gym clothes are left in the bag. The Spruce says to skip chlorine bleach and use a pine oil or phenolic disinfectant or a disinfectant wipe, such as Pine Sol or Spick and Span. Lysol brand disinfectant can also be used and is available in liquid formula or spray. If a backpack is waterproof, only wash it once or twice per year. Otherwise, you may reduce the pack's ability to repel water. Use cleansing wipes to spot clean when necessary. Next article, more information on caregiver stress and more ways to help from the Lifespan Center. As generations age, more caregiving is being provided by people who are not healthcare professionals. Approximately 1 in 3 people in the U.S. are providing care to older adults as informal caregivers. Being a caregiver means providing help to another person in need. This could be a spouse or partner, a disabled child, or an aging relative. Family members who are caring for an older adult oftentimes do not self-identify as caregivers. Recognizing this role can help caregivers receive the support they need. Most caregivers find their role rewarding. Being there when a loved one needs you is a core value and something they wish to provide. A shift in roles and emotions is almost certain. It is natural to feel angry, frustrated, exhausted, and/or sad. Caregiver stress, the emotional and physical stress of caregiving, is common. This can lead to health issues in the person providing the care. As a caregiver, you may be so focused on your loved one that you do not pay attention to subtle changes in your own health. Watch for these signs of caregiver stress. feeling overwhelmed or constantly worried, feeling tired, sleeping too much or not enough, being easily irritated or angered, feeling sad, having frequent headaches, bodily pain, or other physical problems. Too much stress over time can really take a toll on your health. Caregivers are more likely to experience depression or anxiety. Emotional and physical demands of caregiving can wear on even the most resilient person. It's important to take advantage of tools available to help you provide care for your loved one. Remember, if you don't take care of yourself, you won't be able to care for anyone else. Some caregivers have found the following tips for managing caregiver stress beneficial. Accept help from others. Focus on what you are able to provide. Set realistic goals. Seek social support. Join a support group. Set personal health goals. If you are like many caregivers, you have a hard time asking for help. Unfortunately, this attitude can lead to feeling isolated, frustrated, and even depression. Rather than struggling on your own, take advantage of local resources for caregivers. Next article, Horizon Health Surgeon Kozakov earns top honors. The American College of Surgeons has awarded top honors to Yanif Kozakov, MD, General Surgeon at Horizon Health for meeting its highest standards of competency. Dr. Kozakov was one of more than 2,000 surgeons worldwide to be inducted as a fellow of the American College of Surgeons during a virtual ceremony at the organization's annual education program. This year's class was among the largest ever admitted to the college. By meeting the college's stringent membership requirements, fellows of the college have earned the distinguished right to use the designation of FACS, Fellow American College of Surgeons, after their names. This means their education, training, professional qualifications, surgical competence, and ethical conduct have passed a rigorous evaluation that is consistent with the college's high standards. Other Horizon Health physicians to receive the honor include Jihui Lee, MD, General Surgeon, FACS since 2017, and Arturo Menchaca, MD, gynecologist, urogynecologist, FACS since 1991. Dr. Kozakov joined Horizon Health in July 2018. He performs a variety of surgeries, including laparoscopic hernia repair, bowel surgery, gallbladder removal, bariatric surgery, and hemorrhoid surgery. He and Dr. Lee attended the same general surgery and training and performed clinical research in bariatric and minimally invasive surgery at the Cleveland Clinic in Weston, Florida. The American College of Surgeons was founded in 1913 to raise the standards of surgical practice and to improve the quality of patient care. With more than 82,000 members, the college is the largest organization of surgeons in the world. And last article about dementia, caring for the dementia patient. Tipa Snow on YouTube gave ways on how to talk to someone experiencing the loss of brain function. If by chance you and your loved one with dementia get in an argument, you never want to cause more anger. Take a breath and say, "I'm sorry, I was trying to help," or "I'm sorry I made you angry." You can also mention that this is hard for you too. Caring for a loved one with dementia can be a very hard process. It will impact someone's life. In fact, it has impacted my life. Growing up and watching someone you care about contract this disease and watching them get worse as the days go by are very hard to comprehend. My grandma, age 74, recently died due to a heart attack and other complications of Alzheimer's. My grandpa, being the caring man that he is, helped my grandma with her daily living activities. He bathed, helped pick out and put on clothes, brushed her hair, made sure she was fed, helped her with her medication, and even put on her earrings and makeup. My grandma, at the end, became agitated easily, had a hard time going out of the house, and she also had sundowners, which means you stay awake at night. As you can tell, she did not know how to do these simple tasks because this disease takes over the person's brain function. Having a loved one impacted by this disease is hard to watch, but it's even harder when you have to decide what you need to do for them. My grandpa took care of her 24 hours a day and put his whole life into her care. There are many ways you could help your loved one be in a safe environment. And that's the Tri-County Journal for this week. This has been Nicolene Ambrose reading with you. I've enjoyed it, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.